Coming to you live from a whole new apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now here's a guy who has a lot to unpack this week. Literally, I am Rob Cesternino. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Thanksgiving weekend. And we are getting ready to talk with Jamal Shipman today after what an incredible episode of Survivor we got on a Wednesday night. The Thanksgiving feast started early and we ate this week because we had just such an incredible episode of Survivor. Shan went home. People said she was going to win. Now she got voted out at the final eight. We will have an exit interview coming up with Shan on Monday. Be on the lookout for that. Thanksgiving, push that back until Monday. So we'll have that exit interview coming up on Monday morning. But in the meantime, we've got this great interview coming up with Jamal Shipman from season 39. It's going to be great to talk through everything from this week's Survivor Plus. I mean, you can't ask for a more stacked lineup than Jamal and then Shannon Gus will join me. No Survivor Global this week, as Shannon will join me to answer your feedback questions as we get into everything from this week's Survivor. Can't wait to do a deep dive into everything that Shannon is thinking strategically about this episode of the podcast. That's going to be on our feedback show. Feedback questions, send them in. robinswebsite.com/voicemail. Then we'll have also this weekend, all in one weekend, A wand off for dessert after these podcasts. And then make sure you have your wand offs in. Going to record with Josh on Sunday night. Wiggle room at robhasawebsite.com or wand off at robhasawebsite.com for those late wand offs coming in after this week. And on Monday night, I'll be doing the Survivor 41 patron Q&A, where we will go ahead and talk with Jenny Autumn to answer your questions about everything. And of course, it is a great time to become a patron because if you're listening to it this weekend, we have our biggest ever sale that we've ever done on Patreon, where for our Black Friday weekend, we are for the first time ever giving you 2 months off with an annual membership, which works out to, we did the math on this, 1/6 of the year free. You get 16.66666. Don't ask us how we knew that. Percent of the year is free if you do an annual membership for our Black Friday deal. robinswebsite.com/patron. Get in for the Survivor 41 Q&A coming up. Plus, we got some other fun patron events coming up soon that I think you're going to want to check out at robinswebsite.com/patron. And if you want to check out the video for this episode of the podcast, you could check out. I've been very busy all day long today trying to get my new recording studio in tip-top shape for this episode of the podcast. So if you want to take a look at what I've been working on, I will not say that this is a finished product, but this is the product where it is as of 2 o'clock this afternoon on Friday. So if you want to check that out, you can go to robinswebsite.com/YouTube. All right, everybody. We have got a great guest for you here today on this is a huge Survivor week, and the booking gods smiled on us this week because we have a wonderful episode to talk about with one of the greatest guys to talk Survivor with, or probably anything. Please welcome back from Survivor Island of the Idols, the great Jamal Shipman is here. Jamal, how are you?
Hello, Rob Cesternino. I am good. Thank you so much for that very kind introduction.
Jamal, you know that I think the world of you, and I've been amped up to talk Survivor again since we talked about Survivor Winners at War, and that was really one of my favorite recaps that I've gotten to do on the podcast.
Oh, that's very kind of you to say. I think, as we all do, the negative comments kind of stick with you over the positive ones. So I was like, oh no,
I understand that. I totally get that, the negative comments, can be directed at you, but in my mind, it was all positive comments as far as I was concerned, because I just feel like that. I love the way you talk about the game, and who cares if I didn't agree with that take? It was interesting.
Right. And that's exactly why we all watch this show, right? Like, the whole point is to disagree about what's a good move and what's a good, you know, strategy. And I would have done this, you would have done that, you know, like that's the whole fun of it, you know? So at least I get to provide my take and then give people reasons to disagree with me.
Okay. So we have a lot of Survivor to break down, but let's just catch up a little bit. Jamal, how was your Thanksgiving?
My Thanksgiving was amazing. Absolutely amazing. You know, this was always going to be a special one, I think, for a lot of people, because this time last year was for people who made, you know, responsible decisions about mm-hmm. the things going on in our world, just didn't have this kind of gathering, but we did it. And I saw family I hadn't seen in a long time. I ate food I hadn't eaten in a long time. I was stuffed. I watched football. I just did exactly the script that is to be done on Thanksgiving. And I loved every second of it. It was great.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one. Yeah. What's been going on outside of Thanksgiving?
Yeah, outside of Thanksgiving, not much, to be honest. You know, I am still since the show, people are just checking in with me now. You know, since the show, while I was doing the show, I was working at a school, an all girls school, and was, you know, very involved in education and all of that. But since then, have moved on to work for a software company. As a product area consultant for this admission software. It's kind of my industry, you know, independent school admission. And that's been what I've been doing. I'm in my third year of doing that. We closed the office in March of 2020. So I've been working from home ever since then and just trying to, you know, stay afloat here, you know, trying to stay sane, which has been more and more of a challenge for a lot of people.
That's a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, Jamal, I'm imagining you must be so pleased with how this season of Survivor has been going, because I know that you were part of the group, the sole survivors that worked with CBS to change up of what they were doing in terms of casting to get the diversity casting initiative. And you were, you know, one of the, you know, I don't want to rank the members of the group, but, you know, I know you played an important part in the work that was done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got to say, man, when this season, even just like the cast got announced and when the first episode hit, I was so, so proud of the work that we did. So proud of CBS, so proud of Survivor. And I just felt very connected and could literally see the fruits of our labor, you know, and what a privilege, you know, to have gotten a chance to do that, because not a lot of people have that experience, right? When they're fighting the good fight, when they're, you know, pushing up against, you know, the powers that be, they don't always get that immediate sense of like, man, we did that. Like we did that change. And I could just see it in the writing, in the casting, in the ways that the stories have been told this season. It's just so beautiful to see. And actually, before I came on, I wanted to write down a bunch of the names of the people who were involved, because I think it would be nice to know that it wasn't just a small group, right? Like mm-hmm. because Survivor has been around for so many years and we've been, you know, getting 1, 2, 3, you know, people of color, Black people specifically at a time. We finally got to the point where we had a critical enough mass of us as alums who were, you know, sharing and comparing notes about our experience and just being like, let's do something, because we're now at the point where we have a voice. It matters, as Bryce Isaiah reminds us all the time. And it was really powerful. So, right. Like it just, and these are just names of the people that were like directly involved on email chains, on Zoom calls last summer, you know, on meetings with Jeff and the higher ups at the CBS organization, right? Me, Julia Carter, Jatia Hart, Wendell Holland, Bryce Isaiah, Sean Rector, Jolanda Jones, Sharia Lloyd, Sabrina Mitchell, Philip Shepard, Giuseppia Robinson, Davey Rickenbacker, Earl Cole, Ramona Gray, Russ Swan, and so many more. Even like Nayanka showed up on a Zoom call over the summer, and Dre Hurd from ways back. And, you know, obviously I was talking to Missy and Aaron and Lauren the whole time, just kind of staying connected with my own season. But so many incredible, smart, successful, insightful, talented people that got together and said, this is important. And we want to help Survivor become a better show. And I think that's exactly what we're getting this season.
Yeah. You know, congratulations again on the, you know, amazing work, because, you know, it's not easy to, you know, change, you know, a network. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. That's incredible. And it wasn't just Survivor. You know, all of these other shows that, you know, Big Brother, that, and obviously we saw the fruits of that with the Cookout this summer, and mm-hmm. all of the future CBS reality shows are now, you know, going to be operating under that same principle. So, yeah. You know, just, you know, you all like changed, you know, the future of television. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, you know, I'd love to clarify some things about this, because, you know, as you hang out on social media, you get a nice little cross section of what people think about that kind of thing. But I just want to emphasize that it was just the right moment. Right. Like people like you, obviously giving your platform to Black Voices of Survivor and doing those big, you know, panel discussions was a huge help, obviously. And, you know, if I'm being completely honest, we weren't the first time that Survivor and CBS had been having those discussions. They had already been kind of talking about and considering things that they can do to be a little bit more responsive to the moment, you know? Mm-hmm. And so we just had a very receptive group of people in power over there who were ready to listen and ready to take our kind of suggestions. And some things happened a little bit differently because we spoke up, but I just want to say that, you know, we were all ready for this. So very, very happy about the whole thing.
Well, Jamal, let's talk a little bit about season 41, because it was such an incredible episode, and that it was a big shocker that Shan ended up going home. What was your reaction on Wednesday night?
Oh boy, oh boy. Well, first of all, I didn't watch it real time.
Did you get spoiled?
I did not get spoiled. I stayed completely far away. I didn't look at my phone the whole time. I had a dinner with some friends that we hadn't seen in a while. So it was a big sacrifice to mm-hmm. not watch it real time, because I tell you what, like, I love being on the Instagram lives with Wendell and Bryce and watching Cerie's Instagram as she's reacting in real time.
Cerie is amazing. She's like every commercial, she's like posting thoughts.
She's on it. I love it. Love it. Love it. I almost got a chance to watch it with her, because she's actually not too far from me mm-hmm. down here in New Jersey, but it didn't work out. But in the future, I'm definitely going to get a watch party. Just me and Cerie. I think it'll be
Yeah, that's good if you can get it.
Yeah, for sure. But anyway, so I watched it on the recording later that night and was just enthralled, like absolutely enthralled with just the pure gameplay, right? There's a lot of celebration of this episode because it's not about idols and challenges, you know, advantages and all of that. And it was just like very much pure Survivor, who you can trust, who you're playing for, what's the right move for you. And just that last sequence, man, of watching the vote move, right? Like first it was Ricard, then it was Deshaun, then it was Erica, then it was Shan, and then like the split vote, like, the evolution of a vote is so interesting when you're playing the game, right? Because as you know, Rob, like there's a lot of time and less time this season, but there's a lot of time for the vote to move. You know, there's just like, what was the plan before the immunity challenge? Now what's the plan after the immunity challenge? And then who tries to change it right before you go to tribal? And then obviously in this season, who tries to change it right at tribal with Heather and other folks. And so just watching that happen is what I think is just so fun and so engaging about this show. So yeah, my reaction was, if to talk game a little bit, it was the right move. It just was
for Ricard.
For everybody.
Okay.
For everybody. Shan was going to wipe the floor with everybody. Mm-hmm. There was no scenario that anybody could honestly say, I want to sit next to Shan because I think I have a chance to win.
Yeah.
It just wasn't there. It wasn't there. And, you know, hate on Shan all you want, but the fact that people just gave themselves to her.
Yeah.
Like, gave you my
idol. And who's hating on her?
Oh, people, you know, whatever, right? There are people out there that are hating on her, thinking that she was too bossy or she was too, and she's not, they're not wrong, right? Because I think that was a large part of why her relationship broke down at the end. You know, this dumb people giving her crap for being a pastor, playing Survivor and lying, and mm-hmm. she must not be true and all that. I think there's a lot of junk there that I sure. definitely want to get into. But I just think in terms of why Shan needed to be the vote at the very end there, it was because it was the right move for everybody, not just Ricard.
Yeah.
And, you know, this gets into my very first point that I'd like to make, which is, please, you know, a lot of our instincts is like to give someone the credit, which I get it. It makes a lot of sense. This was Ricard's move, right? A lot of people give him the credit because he was the one who told us, I decided to get Shan out. And then he did the legwork to say, okay, you know, this is what we're going to do. We're going to put our votes on Shan, blah, 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 blah. Did I say Shan or did I say Erica? Sorry, I think I said
Shan. Right? Yeah.
Okay. Right. So that is true that it was Ricard who like told us that, but my partner and I were talking during the episode and they were saying, you know, really Survivor, when you're trying to find the vote, it's a marketplace of ideas, right? And just some ideas are just more valuable than others. So for Ricard to say, let's vote out Shan, that, and that's what happened, that means that that idea had the most currency, right? It just had the most, wow. It just had the most, it made the most sense.
This is better than fire tokens.
Yeah, exactly. Right. It had the most value to the most people, so that you didn't have any pushback from Deshaun. You didn't have any pushback from Danny. You didn't have any pushback from Erica, from Heather, from Ricard, right? They all were like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And so what I'm saying is, if Ricard had said any other name, I don't think he would have been able to mobilize people off of himself, because the idea of voting out Shan was just so powerful and so desirable for the most people.
Yeah, well, I really love that thought of the like most valuable idea to the most people. That's a good one. I really want to think about that more.
Yeah.
For me, that I am struggling for Danny and Deshaun, specifically Deshaun, was this the right move to make? Because that my reaction after Wednesday was that when they sort of said like, hey, you know what? We could still pull out of this. Like we could, you know, in case of emergency, break glass and still vote out Erica. That I feel like that for Deshaun, I feel like that his his chance to win, I think, is really gotten narrow.
Because Shan's not there, you think?
I felt like that the best move for the like. I guess if you could get rid of Shan and not have it become like Shan on the jury, I feel like now is, I think, a problem for Deshaun. And the way that it all went down, like I feel like that this was like a very messy exit for Shan, where I don't know. I kind of feel like that Danny and Deshaun, they had Erica, they had Heather. Like if I think they had the right instinct to get rid of Ricard, because that they could have, you know, still like if they wanted to make this move down the road, like make it at five and don't take Shan to the final four, that I just feel like that this was like a messy way to get rid of her.
Okay. I see that. I see your point there, but again, you have to root it in the moment, right? So let's remember what happens, right? Yeah, they had the right plan right after the reward challenge. They had the absolute right plan. Ricard was amassing too much power. He was trying to do some jury management by inviting those people to the reward. They had the numbers to get Ricard. They had it. That was the right, absolute correct call. But then he wins immunity, and winning immunity always messes up, right? Those kinds of amazing, great, good call plans, right? Mm-hmm. And Survivor knows that. And so they love to play this up for us, right? Because they know who wins all the challenges and things. So now that Ricard has immunity, you're saying they should have just stayed with the Erica vote, or they had the option to either stay with the Erica vote.
It's hard because then you lose Erica if you take out Erica.
Right. But so here's why I think I strategically disagree with you, right? Is because you can't lose those pieces thinking you're going to make a big move later on. You have the pieces now. And who understood that the best? Ricard.
Sure.
Ricard knew that Shan had the pieces to get him out later. He was not going to have a chance against Shan if he let the pieces of his move, right? The Erica and the Heather and the Xanders, let them go because he was weakening his position over and over again. And I think Deshaun made the same call, right? I think Deshaun and Danny and all of them, the reason why that idea was so powerful to them is because they made the same call, knowing that if Shan stayed around with her idol, with the extra vote, with the power that she has to pull, to move votes, right? To be stubborn, right? Ricard said it, but I think Deshaun heard it, which is as soon as Shan decides that I should go, she's going to be able to make it happen. Mm-hmm. And I think that would be true for everybody. As soon as Shan decided that Deshaun should absolutely go, she was going to be able to execute that. It was just fortuitous, right? That enough people were off of the Shan train, right? That she didn't have enough power to move it onto Deshaun right then, or for some reason she moved it to Erica. Actually, let me ask you this question, because there's a little hole in my understanding of the episode. After the immunity challenge, before the immunity challenge, Shan was all about getting Deshaun. Right after the immunity challenge, she moved on to Erica. Do you know why that happened, or do you have context for what happened there?
I have to watch it again.
Yeah. There's a moment there where I'm like, I'm confused about why we're back on Erica. And I didn't exactly get what
I had my notes, but full disclosure, Jamal, I lost my notes in the move.
That's okay. That is quite all right. I think it was such an impactful episode. I think we have it. We have what's going on. But anyway, so my point here, though, is I do think it was the right move for Deshaun and Danny to go this route. Mostly because of what Deshaun told us about his survivor thinking, which is to say, if we let Ricard go and Shan is mad about it, where's she going to go? She just has to come right back to us because her closest ally is gone and she just has to work with us. I think he made the same calculation about Liana. And I think he was comfortable kind of chopping off a big element of the game that other players had as keys to their survival as well. So that's why I really don't begrudge it, but I think it was the right one for everybody.
So do you feel like Liana will be coming back to work with Danny and Deshaun, where I was thinking about her as sort of like in a like Natalie Anderson mode where, okay, you voted out Jeremy, everybody. All right, now you're all going to pay for this. But I guess she doesn't really have too many other ways to go.
She doesn't have any other option. So what's going to happen is, like I said, this is why I really like this, you know, ideas as currency kind of thing, is what's going to happen next week is they're going to say, okay, Liana, we're sorry. You know, obviously you're upset with us, but how about Xander?
Mm-hmm.
And Liana
want to get out Xander. Yeah.
Obviously hates Xander's face, which I have some experience with. I don't know what it is about getting women on Survivor to hate your face, but Nora for some reason didn't like my face. I don't know why, but it's fine. It's just what happens out there.
We don't even need to try to explore that.
Yeah. So Liana is going to now be conflicted because she's obviously doesn't like Danny and Deshaun at this point, but they're going to float
right.
Flushing Xander's idol, come back, work with us, one more vote, blah, blah, blah. And she's going to be torn. And I think for her survivor life, she needs to get over it fast and get on board with the group again,
right,
to pass those relationships, because it's I get she's playing with her emotions, and we should definitely talk about the Shan Liana relationship, but at this point she needs to turn that off. She just does, and she needs to go back to making the right decisions for her own survival week to week.
And I brought up Natalie Anderson, but Natalie Anderson, that after Jeremy got voted out, that she told everybody like, oh, no, it's no problem. It's cool. We're still going to work together. But she was secretly like, yeah, I'm going to like beat you all and then I'm going to win. But she worked with them for a while. And, you know, if Liana can sort of like, OK, Danny, Deshaun, like, it's cool. Don't worry about it. But it's like secretly like, yeah, I'm going to beat you both.
Yeah, no. And then that's exactly what she needs to do. Right. She needs to lay low here. Right. Let the group move their target off of her, because if you stay mad about it, then you're keeping yourself at the top of the list for people. But if you chill out, now people are going to let you fall. And now Xander and Erica. Right. There's already some targets that other people want out. Right. So you just got to get right. Drop yourself on that list a little bit. I know my season is my reference point. So I end up talking about it a lot, which makes sense, right? That's why you have former Survivor players on, right?
That, I mean, don't feel weird about it. Like, that's yeah. like we that's would love to hear your experience about playing Survivor.
Yeah. So if you remember way early in season 39, when I got blindsided with the Molly vote,
yes,
very long early in the season, lots of things happened after that.
Sure,
but the big critical thing I have, or criticism that I have of myself, is I didn't let it go, right? I continued to be either like upset about, not upset about it. I wasn't upset about it. I continued to want to control my game, right? And you hear these players say it a lot, right? Like a number of people have said, I don't want people telling me what to do. I want to play my game. I want to control my fate in my own game. I want to be the one to make the decisions and get the people out that I want to get out. And that is so toxic, especially after it has been made clear to you that you're on the bottom or you're on the outs of the power center of the decision making, right? So after Molly got voted out, I should have sat down, found my little idol, which I did, and I should have just said, whatever you guys want to do. Because the energy at that time was on Dan, right? If we had gone to tribal again, I don't know that it would have been me. I think there was a lot of movement to get Dan out.
Mm-hmm. What might have been, Jamal?
Sorry. Yeah. Let me edit that. I have to re-edit that. That's actually not true. The energy was on Nora, right?
Okay.
The energy was on Nora to get Nora out. And I was like, no, Dan needs to be the one to go out because I want to control the vote.
Yeah.
And that's when Tommy and Janet and all of them were like, all right, well, then maybe it's Jamal because he's thinking that he's in control here and we need to maybe turn it on him. So that's what I'm saying. For Liana, if she can hear me in the past,
yeah,
chill out, let the energy move off of you and go get your revenge at the end of the game. Not now. Now is not the right time to try to make your next vote so tied to your anger about Shan being gone or you being blindsided.
Jamal, do you have any thoughts about the legacy of Shan? Like, what will future players take away from watching Shan's run this season?
Yes. Shan is a legend. She is an icon. She is a game changer. She has marked the new era of Survivor.
Mm-hmm.
All just in her essence, in the way she just laid it all out there, man. Like, first of all, on a personal level, this woman, man, you know, pastor, she used to be homeless. She's struggling, you know, with MS right now, which wasn't a huge part of the show, but she's been honest with that with us on social media about her kind of, you know, her concerns about even playing the game of Survivor because she didn't know if her MS symptoms were going to flare up out there. And the strength that it takes and the courage and the vulnerability it takes to put yourself in that position. Oh my gosh. And you don't even have to listen to Shan directly to understand how powerful she was as a player, right? You've heard every single person that came off of her Uwa tribe.
Yeah.
Tell you, Shan's my number one.
Mm-hmm.
Shan's it. Like, I was working with her. She was my girl, right? Why does everybody feel that way? It's not by accident. And I love that you can see how good a player's game is from the reports of other players to be like, yeah, she was doing it. She was doing it up. Now, obviously that came in and was her downfall. And we can talk about why she kind of lost it at the end there. But I think what the lesson to take away here is play with your full self. Play with all of the emotions and all of the reasons that people are going to find connection, right? Like the Liana Shan connection at the top of that mountain was purely based on their shared experience, right? Was purely based on their conversations about their mother, about their blackness, about their womanhood, right? All of the things that make us who we are, right? You bring it to the game because you don't know who's going to hear that and feel that and connect with you and then give you information because of it, right? It's not something separate from the game. It is the game, right? And so that's what I hope is the takeaway, right, for future Survivor players is don't hide. Don't try to be a character, you know, don't try to, you know, be so like game body and conniving, right? Like the beauty and advantage in this game is who you are. And when you bring that forward, it can literally change the course of your game for the better because people will feel that, want to work with you, want to keep you around, want to connect with you, want to give you information, right? And you can work that into your strategy. But first, it's being yourself. And Shan gave us a masterclass on that.
To me, her superpower was just, as you mentioned, like her ability to just connect with people where, you know, you saw it really with Liana where they were together for what, an hour? And Liana is like, I'm ready to like completely like give up everything else I have going on in the game to work completely with Shan. And you had it with, you know, she had it with JD. She had it with Jeannie. She had it with Brad. She had it with Ricard. You know, she had it with with Danny and Deshaun, and when she first met with them, and she just like had this like magnetism where, you know, it's like an elite skill to have on Survivor.
Yeah, it is. It absolutely is an elite skill, and it's one to make a little bit of a transition towards her demise here. It is an elite skill that you need to be self-aware about. Mm-hmm. Because if you're just being awesome and you don't know that you're being awesome and you don't know that everyone else is going to know that you're being awesome, you're going to miss when the tide turns against you for the very reason that you got as far as you did. And that's what happened, right? People started to notice that she just had so much power, not because of her idol, not because of her extra vote, just on the power of her ability to connect and persuade and to put it out there, right? She just was the leader, you know? She was the first one to step forward in that challenge to get the rice. She was the one trying to organize everyone's votes, trying to balance everyone's interests. That's what changed the tide for her, is that she needed to be a little more self-aware to understand that it is literally that's going to be the reason where the idea of getting you out is going to be an appealing one for most people.
Yeah. I mean, she has all of those skill sets. She was also very much seen as like the shot caller. And this was something that came up on the podcast a couple of weeks ago where, you know, it's the final 10. She's seen as the person who's really running things. And I feel like that's never a good position to be in modern Survivor, as sort of like the person who's like the prohibitive favorite to win the season, you know, at the merge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really not. It's really not. And what she could have benefited from a little bit is some Sandra-itis. Mm-hmm. She should have said, you know what? If everybody wants this person, it's not me. So I'm fine with it. Whatever y'all want to do, right? I think she needed to adopt a little bit more of that. Now, she got there sometimes, right? I think the Nasir vote was a sign of her doing it. But she did it so begrudgingly, right? And she just was so hesitant and resistant to giving into other people's ideas that I think it, even though she went along with it, it feels like she didn't really get the credit for that, right? It feels like people were like, oh, we had to pull teeth to get Shan to do what we wanted to do, you know? Mm-hmm.
Jamal, it was that sort of like, okay, she should have been doing more of that, or was like when she decided to hedge on a couple of those votes, the Nasir vote and the vote before when she was like pushing for get Xander out, like, hey, like, look, we got to flush Xander's idol, and she gave in, or ultimately they went with a different plan than what she had. I mean, I think that those were more things that sort of lined up to then, you know, because she went away from, you know, pounding the table and, you know, doing what she wanted. And these ideas that other people had, I think, were things that added up to her going out this week.
To her going out?
I mean, Nasir, I don't think was going to vote her out.
You're right. And so what you're bringing up is like, if she had fought to keep Nasir, then she would have had an ally to like stave off her ultimate.
Mm-hmm. You know, and if they listened to her to flush Xander's idol, they could be voting out Xander this week. Okay. Now that they don't have his idol. So I feel like that. I just wonder if maybe it's instead of like, she should have taken her foot off the gas, so she should have been even more, like, yes, like floor it.
Okay. I so respect that. And I think that's actually a really solid take. I disagree with it, and I'll tell you why. Mm-hmm. Why is she still at the very end could have avoided being voted out?
Okay.
She still could have avoided it, right? It wasn't the writing on the wall. There's a lot of votes that the writing's on the wall. I think my vote was like that. Mm-hmm. There was literally nothing I could do.
Yeah.
Everyone completely scripted the future of their game without me. I was an expendable piece, right? I was, you know, the second merge boot, or whatever you call the spot that I went at, right? And that was it. I couldn't maneuver. I couldn't make a different decision. I wasn't in the middle. I just had the entire tribe stacked against me. This was not Shan's situation. If Shan would have just kept her mouth closed about Ricard when Liana told her, at least until after the immunity challenge, right? This is my big criticism of the end of her game. She should not have told Ricard before the immunity challenge. She should have just held on to that information, right? Let the immunity challenge play out the way it was going to play out, learned that Ricard was going to win, and then she should have made whatever move made sense to her, which I think the move that should have made sense to her was to let Ricard go, or let Ricard drive whatever vote he was going to make without knowing, without the enforcement that Shan was going to be so powerful. You see what I'm saying? So I think Shan had an opportunity to save herself, but it was her instinct to be in control that really sunk her, because she opened the door for the vote to move so far around that it came back and bit her. So I don't think that she made mistakes leaving, you know, letting go of Nasir and whatever the vote was before that. I think she just didn't shift in this episode the right way to have it be anyone but her. She actually should have been, if Ricard didn't win, she should have let Ricard go. Mm-hmm. Ricard didn't win. She should have let Ricard go, and she should have been completely quiet about it. She should have let Deshaun and Danny and Liana, she should have let Deshaun and Danny and company think that they were blindsiding her and let Ricard go and come back to them. Oh my gosh, I'm so, you know, that was a good move, guys. I'm so sorry. Really, though, she knew that she had the information and she let it happen. That's what I'm talking about. She couldn't do it. Not because of some fatal, you know, personality flaw. I think she just felt so connected, right? She just felt her relationship was so strong with Ricard that she felt like it was disingenuous to her person, which is, again, why I think it's so silly to hate on Shan in the ways that I hear people hating on her, which is like, oh, she's so cutthroat. She's so, like, sneaky. She's a liar. She's conniving. But to the relationships that truly matter to her, she has a really, really hard time going against those relationships in the name of survivor strategy. She just does. Mm-hmm. And I think she did it with JD. She did it with Jeannie. And I think that aspect of the game really wore her down, where she started to say, no, I need the people who are close to me to still be here because I'm feeling so raw. I'm feeling so emotionally drained. I need people around me that I can trust. I need Liana. I need Ricard to play through this piece of the game with me, because if I don't, I'm going to feel alone and I'm going to feel like I am not in control of my game. And so I think that was just too powerful for her to let happen. So that's my take. That's why I don't think that the former moves of Shan's were mistakes. I just think she learned some lessons about her own game and was a little bit blind to the way that the tide was turning against her, and then was so resistant to letting go of those connections.
Yeah. I agree with you that she probably shouldn't say anything to Ricard before the immunity challenge. But it's just, this is such an interesting week to talk about the show, because it's just like bad decisions everywhere. It's like a movie where like that, whatever the people in the movie are going to do, like, it's like, what's the least bad decision? But for Shan, I think that if she lets Ricard go, I think she's really putting all of her eggs in the alliance with the black players, that they're going to go to the final four, because I just don't see anybody else that's going to vote with her and Liana to potentially, you know, go around Danny and Deshaun. And that's the part of this that's just like so complicated for me to like try to, you know, wrap my head around, where that when the black players are talking about how they're playing for the culture and playing for the, you know, for the people outside of themselves, that, you know, it's very hard for me to also like, you know, like I'm wired to talk about survivor strategy. Like it's very hard for me to, you know, figure out like the motivations that aren't, you know, exactly that. And I can just go by what, you know, they're telling me on the TV and, you know, try to factor that into the equation.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm so glad you framed it that way. Because next big point I'd like to share with you and everyone is, it is no different. It really isn't. And I know it feels different because it's this element that a lot of players aren't connected to and doesn't resonate for you. And a lot of the fans who watch the show think of it as either inconsequential or unnecessary or whatever word you want to insert here. But to connect on race and to connect on a shared experience of what 2020 was, and I'm not talking about the pandemic, mm-hmm. right? To connect on those things is the same thing as connecting about any other thing. Any other thing, right? So all of those religious players out there in seasons past who stuck together because of their faith in whatever, you know, was happening out there. All of those former players who connected because they were from the same state, all of the players who connected because they both shared, you know, some, you know, significant loss in their life. It is all the same human stuff, right? That you, every single person has to decide, do I trust that the other people who are connecting with me on those things are going to hold that up as important enough to keep me with them going forward? Or do I suspect that it is not as important for them, so I need to make the first move out of that? It's the same thing. So survivor culture, survivor, I don't know, mechanics, right, works with this element the same way across all forms of connection, right? And so I think it's interesting. I think it's very telling that when it is about race, you get a very specific kind of criticism that you don't for any other things. Mm-hmm. And I'm gonna leave that right there. But I think it is so the what I'm responding to is, I think a lot of people are saying, like, you know, the Black Alliance is a bad idea for the show, or it's actually a bad idea for Black players going forward, because now they're going to get targeted. But my big point here is, like, that's what happens, everybody, right? Like, there was a Women's Alliance how many seasons ago that worked, right? And we're still, right, kind of a little bit paranoid about them. They get people a little bit squirrely, but it never holds together, right? Mm-hmm. It never does. It never holds together. And I think the same is going to happen here. So when you're talking about players that are going to play in season 43, right, if before this episode, right, this is what I was saying before this episode, if the players of season 43 see a final three of season 41 of all Black players, and we see how that all played out, then they have total and complete license to be suspicious of all Black players from the beginning of the game. And that would make sense, right? And this was my big point in my season when I did the whole thing about the Women's Alliance before the merge episode, which was like,
right,
look, I'm an ally, you know, I'm a feminist, I worked at an all-girls school, I'm all about the cause. I would love to see a woman winner. But when I'm playing Survivor, I don't want to see a woman winner. When I'm playing Survivor, I want to win, right? When I'm playing Survivor and there's a Women's Alliance, it's an alliance that I can never be a part of. Therefore, I have to be against it and I have to strategize around it. And so I just think that should it have played out that the Black Alliance stuck together and got all the way to the final four, I think that that's just what would have happened, and that would have been fine, because that's what Survivor does, right? Mm-hmm. It makes people suspicious of the connections that other people have access to that I don't, and they strategize around it. So I just think people seem to be treating it as this new thing or this, like, different thing that's happening. And it's just another pillar of connection that is getting played with inside of the mechanics of the game.
I was thinking about this the other day for the Black players that are on this particular season, and it being the first season with the diversity initiative and the first Survivor season back in the new era, that they must have had, more pressure on them than, many of the other players to come back and play in this mm-hmm. season. And I'm sure that they also feel pressure where, you know, that, you know, you saw in this episode that Deshaun and Shan are both talking about how, like, I really want to win. But I also, you know, feel pressure for, the people watching the show to, you know, stick together with the other Black players. And we saw that, you know, certainly play out, you know, in much more slow motion compared to this summer with Big Brother.
Yeah, 100%. And I feel for them in that moment. And I can't say that I wouldn't have felt that also if I had been in exactly their position. But tying back to what we did this past summer mm-hmm. with the Soul Survivors and the Black Survivor Alliance, the changes that we made about diversity, not only in casting, but also in diversity of how stories are being told, right? Yeah. People behind the camera, right? The players' experience, right? We had a lot of criticisms about the players' experience behind the scenes and afterwards and all of that. And we really made some significant changes. Let's let that be the revolution. Let's let that be the movement. And my big PSA to Black players going forward in Survivor is, you don't have to carry that banner in the game. We did it, right? We're here. We have diverse casting. We have circumstances where us as individuals have leveled the playing field a little bit. You can go out and play your game. I don't think you need to feel this big pressure to stick together for the cause or anything like that. Now, after saying that, mm-hmm. when we get back into the game of Survivor, if other Black players feel that way, then go with it, right? Yeah. Because that's the reason why you're connecting with people, just like I said, like any other reason. So it can be an element that brings people together. I don't have a problem with that, but I do want to kind of alleviate individual players' kind of moral dilemma about whether they'll be seen as a traitor to their race or are they doing the wrong thing and for whatever reason. Like, you don't need to play this game that way, right? We did the work outside the game to give us a game that is a little more equitable, a little more fair to everybody. Now go and play the game of the moment, right? The way that it feels right to you without that added layer, you know? So again, don't mishear me. I'm not saying don't do Black Alliances. I'm just saying as an individual player, you don't need to feel like you're doing some bigger betrayal, right? If you don't stick with the Black Alliance, you know, 4 episodes from the end of the game, right? Like, it's okay. Mm-hmm. Right? Use what mm-hmm. you can to get yourself forward and then bail as soon as you make the calculation that that's no longer serving your individual chances of winning this game. And that's exactly what happened here, right? Mm-hmm. Deshaun made that calculation. Danny made that calculation, right? They just said, this isn't serving me. This isn't serving me. And I'm going to make that chance. I'm going to take that chance. And that's okay. That's the right thing to do in the game of Survivor. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And win the game. You know, Deshaun was getting choked up talking about it in the confessionals. You could see like the pressure that he was feeling of like, you know, I know what's best for my game and I know what I have to do, but this is not what I want to do. You know, we have this bond and I don't want to break it, but I also really want to win.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And, you know, on the other side of that, unfortunately see a future in this game where now it becomes something that non-Black players strategize against, mm-hmm. which would be so messy and inspire so much commentary about racism and the way it plays out in the game and all of that. But honestly, I don't think with the way things just played out this past episode, I don't think non-Black players need to be afraid of Black alliances solely. You can be afraid of any alliance, mm-hmm. any alliance that doesn't include you and try to incorporate into your strategy. But I don't think white people need to get together and start picking off the Black players because they're afraid of them getting together with the Black players.
Yeah. And also, please don't.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Please don't. Please don't. But yeah. I also think it's against your interest as a player, right? Because Xander's there, Heather's there, Evie was there for a long time, right? These players didn't have to do that, right? And, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
By all arguments, right? Xander's in a really good spot, right? Kind of laying low, letting the alliance kind of cannibalize a little bit, right? So you don't need to do that. And I would, you know, slap my own wrist, right? To say like, any of us men don't need to target women so early in the game because we're afraid of a women's alliance. You don't need to do that, right? Like, let the game play out, make calculations, you know, for your own purposes, but it doesn't need to be this like huge preemptive strike against something that could possibly happen that then will play into some weird social dynamics that kind of are of this moment now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that goes back to, you know, when the heroes screwed things up back in Heroes versus Villains, like, you know, you don't need to like break up an alliance that you like are having a hypothesis that, you know, you've sort of like imagined like, yeah, there are some women voting together. This must be a women's alliance. Let's give Russell the idol so we can break up the women's alliance.
Yeah, right. So that's a great example because that's an example of how dumb decisions get made mm-hmm. that way. Mm-hmm. Really stupid,
yeah.
Notoriously, epically stupid decisions get made in that vein. And so, yeah, let's go ahead and not do that. Like, I like your explicit denunciation of that act.
You know, and Jamal, it's going to be also interesting because that we, you know, we had Big Brother this summer. We had Survivor 41, but we're really going to get to see the first version of this experiment a third time in Survivor 42, because the Survivor 42 players haven't seen Survivor 41. So everything that we're sort of like experiencing firsthand in Survivor, you know, I think that we're going to see how, you know, 18 or 20, whatever it is, like new players also try to, you know, navigate, you know, these new social politics for the first time again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 And, that's a beautiful thing. You know, it's a beautiful thing. And you know, just to go back to the, I've been hanging out in the Survivor fandom a little too much. I think I'm going to unplug after this.
Where do you hang out?
I'm all over the place. You know, I'm in the Discord. I'm in the Reddit thread. I'm in the Facebook groups.
How's it going out there, Jamal?
It's a tough landscape. It's a tough landscape sometimes. And I think some of the louder voices are the minority voices of opinion, right? And so that's important to keep in mind. Like, for, you know, all you have to do is go look at Shan's Instagram account right now and just read the list of, you know, support and love and appreciation that she's getting, right? To just understand that this is not the Shan haters out there and the ways that people might hate on Shan is not the dominant culture. But I do want to just say that, like, the value of diverse casting, right, is so that other kinds of stories are centered, right? Like, who do you know the most about this season, right? You know about Deshaun, you know about Shan, right? You know about Liana being a student, right? You know about Evie and their kind of journey with their own, you know, identity and strategy in the game and. You just get to hear and center stories from people who have not been typically centered in this game. And understandably, that might be off-putting or may toss into the fray this kind of idea that, like, Survivor's changing and it's becoming woke. And, you know, I don't like that, you know, I'm not hearing the same, you know, middle America Christian story anymore or whatever. And it's like, look, you don't own the game. Okay. Like, when I was watching the season, I wasn't plugged into the social media and I was loving every second of it. The storytelling, oh my gosh, right? Like Erica and her whole journey, Nasir, right? And his whole experience with the language barrier and what Survivor has meant to him. And, you know, and then, you know, Shan telling hers and Liana and you just are really getting to experience some real nuggets of life lived that have not particularly been centered and prioritized as part of the telling of the story of how this weird game plays out, right? Like, maybe we're a little bit tangential. Maybe we're like funny characters or we're, you know, crazy characters or threatening, aggressive characters. And that was kind of it, right? But now you get to complicate those stories, right? And you get to fall in love with these players for who they are. And you actually get to maybe see yourselves in people who you might haven't typically seen yourself in or because of the way that stories are being told, right? And so, basically all that to say that, like, if you are someone out there who is upset about the direction of the game or having a hard time watching or one of these people that every week they say, all right, well, I'm not watching anymore and I'm canceling Survivor. Like, just take a second and just appreciate, right, that you're being you're getting the opportunity to learn from people that you wouldn't otherwise been exposed to learn from. And find the beauty in that, you know, so to put a point on that. No, I have no idea what it's like to be hard of hearing. I hear really well with both of my ears. That's my experience. I am biased or I am ignorant to the struggles of hard of hearing people. That piece about Ricard and his hard of hearing in one ear. Oh my God. I had no idea. Right. How beautiful is that? Right. To not only, you know, not pigeonhole him as like, oh, well, he's just the man who's married to a trans person and, you know, and he has a certain sexual orientation and all of this. But now he just has this very across the board kind of human experience that he's sharing with us. And we're getting a window into how it's difficult to play this game with this experience that's, you know, not that's a little bit hidden. Right. It's one of those disabilities that's not like obvious. I think that's beautiful. I think that's so gorgeous. And I really love that the game of Survivor has me curious and interested in some aspect of life that I wouldn't have otherwise been exposed to even, mm-hmm. you know, and, yeah. and how beautiful is that?
Well, Jamal, I think that this episode was so great. I said it was the best one of the season and of the new era, because I mean, I think that all season we spent time like getting to know these characters. And then, you know, the greatest survivor drama comes not from flipping a coin or, you know, random happenstance, but yes. when we, these players that we've sort of really come to know, that we understand their motivations and their, you know, conflicted decisions, and, you know, having to turn on one another for, you know, what's best for them. And I think that that's why this episode was just there were so many different characters that had these different motivations. And that was just so amazing to watch, where, you know, you had really understood why everybody was doing what they were doing.
Yeah, that's it right there. That is the key, Rob. And I love that you brought up kind of the mechanics of the game, because I'm all the way done with the flipping coins.
Yeah. Right? Well,
all the way done with the draw the rock out of the bag. Mm-hmm. Like, stop it.
Or right? pull the rope. Yeah.
Please stop it. Because what's so gorgeous about this game is putting yourself in the player's shoes and asking yourself, what would I do? And it is hearing the players talk through why they're doing what they're doing. Right. So, you know, this ship wheel thing, I'm fine with it. I'm fine with the ship wheel thing, because at least it let us have a window into why they might trust each other. Are they going to turn it this way or that way? Where do they perceive themselves in the game?
You're a ship man.
I'm a ship man. You're right. Good one, Rob. So yeah, that's fine. Right. And so the beauty of the game is watching those decisions get made and getting to know these players enough so that you can actually have a good sense, right? So that next week when, you know, Deshaun is given some dilemma between, you know, what to do with Liana and whatever, right? Hypothetically, I don't know what's happening next week, but I'm just saying, when Deshaun is given some choice to make, we have a lot of information right now to predict, to be like, I don't know, Deshaun is the kind of person who fill in the blank, or, you know, that thing that happened between Deshaun and Liana, you know, is really going to strain his ability to think clearly at this point where he has this decision to make. That's Survivor, mm-hmm. not flip a coin and now someone's off on an island and has to like make a choice about breaking an hourglass or whatever, right? Like, I'm all the way done with that, because that just doesn't fit the excitement for me about what the show is, right? I want to get to know why the players are doing and deciding what they're doing and deciding.
Going back to Liana and her decision to tell Shan, you know, obviously, like, you know, if I'm, you know, a person who is doing a, you know, breaking down a Survivor podcast about strategy, like, I don't think that that was the right strategic decision to tell Shan, but I think Liana knows that that is not the right strategic decision to tell Shan. And she loved Shan so much that she didn't care.
Right. Right. Well,
and that's very, that's very compelling.
Yes. Yes. 100%. I don't think we're confused at all as an audience as to why she decided to do that. And that's what's great, right? That means that story was told so well that while we disagree with it strategically, we get it. Beautiful. Love that. I have a little bit of a different take on it, though, which is I don't think it is inherently a bad decision to mm-hmm. tell Shan.
Yeah.
Here's what Liana could have done.
Yeah.
Liana could have said, hey, Shan, I want to give you the heads up. These guys are trying to blindside Ricard. Now, don't freak out. Don't tell Ricard. Let's keep this between you and me. I agree with them that we should let Ricard go, but I needed you to know that this was happening because I couldn't do that to you. I couldn't blindside you. So I want you to trust me, Shan, that I am looking out for your best interests, and I'm telling you so that you can trust that I have your best interests in mind. But I do think that we should go along with the plan, but I just want you to know. What does that do? That locks in Shan and Liana as like a final two type situation against these guys who are conniving against Shan, right? This is how you leverage information. This is mm-hmm. how you do it, right? And so I don't think it was inherently a mistake for Liana to tell her, but she just needed to do it a little bit differently and not let Shan Shanicize,
right? Shanicize, whoa.
Right? Well, that's what she did, right? Because what happens every time you tell Shan something? every time you tell Shan something, she's like, okay, well then I guess
she's going to go to work. Yeah.
She goes to work, right? She's like, all right, thank you for that information. Now we got to flip the vote over here. What, Heather, you want to vote Nasir? All right, I guess it has to be Heather. Oh, what? This information is new to me? Well, I guess, right. So she does this, right? And so I really wanted so badly for Liana to take control of that moment and not let Shan take over, right? And be like, all right, well, then I guess it's Deshaun and this is what we're going to do and this is how we're going to do it, blah, blah, blah. Because it could have been a real powerful game moment for Liana to be in the center of that information exchange.
I wonder also, and that would be a very good play to go the way that you're saying she should have gone. But I kind of feel like that, you know, she knows how powerful Shan is and what she's capable of. And like, I kind of wonder if it's like, the superhero movie where it's like, if you find out that, you know, somebody's coming to kill Batman or in this case, Wonder Woman, like, I guess you tell them because you assume they're going to figure out a way out of this. And never in her wildest dreams did Liana think that this sequence ends in Shan getting voted out.
Right. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And Liana could not have known that it was going to flip back, you know, obviously, clearly, because she voted Erica with Shan and she was the one left out. And good move on the rest of the crew for leaving Liana out because they knew that she couldn't be trusted with information to go against Shan, which is completely right. Unfortunate that Liana set herself up in this game where people know when to leave you out of things. And that to me is another kind of cardinal sin of Survivor, right? One that I committed myself, where people felt like they couldn't tell me things because they just knew that I would not be trustworthy to go along with that plan, right? You have to play this game where people are thinking that they could pull you in. This is why Danny is masterful right now, because somehow he has played the game in such a way where Erica and Heather thought that they might could pull him into a plan, right? So this is something I was thinking about last night, which is a lot of people come into the game and they say things to each other like this. They'll be like, hey, you and me, we got to look out for each other. If you hear my name, tell me. If I hear your name, I'll tell you. And that's how a lot of people go into it to build trust, right? I would modify this, and I know I'm giving my future game away here, but I think it's really cool to like think this through with everybody. I don't think that should be the move. I think the move should be, hey, if you are out there talking to other people and you are trying to concoct a plan, I want you to know that if you come to me and ask me to participate, I'm going to do it with you. Mm-hmm. I am someone that you can pull into a plan to get someone else out. So I'm available to you.
Yeah.
In this way, right? That's a little bit different, right? That's a little bit different than just tell me if you hear my name. Mm-hmm. Because now Danny and Deshaun were enough obvious about their allegiances that Ricard felt like he could pull him into the Shan vote and Erica felt like Danny could be pulled into the Shan vote. And that's a really, really powerful place to be. When people want to include you in their plan, you are golden because you're seen as valuable, you're not in trouble, and you're on the inside and you vote correctly. Beautiful. I think that's beautiful.
Jamal, that's like the classic Sandra. That's like anybody but me, whatever you want to do.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Now you can't do that too much because then that flips and then they're like, okay, well, if you're not going to promise final two with me or if you're not going to be loyal or if I see you talking to that person, then I don't know if you're loyal to
me. You're expendable.
But I do think that there's something to this of like, just have people that you're kind of tangentially working with know that you're up for grabs, that you're someone that can be pulled in.
Yeah. We have not talked much about Ricard and that, I know you said that, you know, there are other players that, you know, deserve credit for this, but I really feel like that this ends up being Ricard's move this week. Can you talk about where you feel like he is moving forward? Do you feel like that he is the person to beat right now?
100%.
Yeah.
100%. And I don't know that Ricard could have done anything about that, right? At some point in the game, you got to put all your cards on the table. Right. At some point, you have to just be good at the endurance challenge so that you don't go home. Like at some point, you have to show that you're a masterful puzzle maker because you don't want to go home. At some point, you have to make the move and pull people into your strategy to get someone out. And now everyone knows that you're a masterful strategist. Right. This is the right time to have done that. Right. if Ricard was doing that and being so obvious about his amazingness as a Survivor player too early on, that would have been bad. That would have been a bad time to do it. I fault myself with that. I too soon, people pegged me as like a challenge beast, and then no one really wanted to kind of go up against me right after the merge. So I think Ricard is doing what he needs to do, and now is the person to beat, right? Like that's just kind of how it is. And what an assassin, dude. Oh my God. Like I watched the episode again. So I've watched it twice now. If you look into this dude's eyes, when he's talking to Shan, when he's doing his confessionals, when he's plotting with Erica and Heather, this guy is cold blooded and so incredible to watch him in juxtaposition to Liliana and Shan, who are just raw and emotional and just weepy and really feeling kind of run down by the mechanics of the game. Whereas I feel like Ricard just has it. He's just like cool and calm and just kind of surfing the turbulence in just this calculating enough way where Shan and Ricard Shan is not in a relationship with herself, right?
Right.
In terms of Ricard, like Shan and Ricard both have a lot of emotional investment in each other. You can see it now on social media. They have so much love for each other, and so much so that, you know, Shan, you know, wasn't mad at him when she left. But Ricard's able to put it away, right? Ricard's able to say, yes, love you. You're amazing. You're number one. You're incredible in all these ways. I'm sure we're going to be friends forever, and you're going to, you know, be an auntie to my kids and all of that. But I got to take you out, girl. I just got to do it. And that is an attribute of all the greats. All the greats have this element to them, right? I don't think anybody gets to the end playing a completely emotional game. You have to make the kill shot, right? You just have to do it against all human connection. You just got to be ready to do it. And that's hard. That is hard. Yeah. I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it.
I love the move that Ricard made this week, and I've been very, very high on Ricard over these last couple of weeks, especially since the merge. I've loved his position. It's going to be very interesting to watch now how Ricard operates without Shan, because I feel like that the pairing of Ricard and Shan were just such a powerful duo. Well, first of all, they completely decimated an entire tribe, but that I feel like that. I talked about earlier that I think that Shan, her superpower is just like this off the charts charisma, where she can connect with people instantly and win them over and have people like be making decisions that are not in their best interest. But Ricard is so cerebral and is a little bit more cold and calculating, where Shan is like warm and you know, can, you know, just like connect with you, and you want to work with her, and just the two of them together, you know, as a mastermind, where, you know, that Ricard can sort of like come up with the game plan of like, okay, well, this is like this like amazing way to split the vote. And then Shan could be the person to, you know, go and get the extra vote from JD, and just to have them working together. It was, you know, a really fun thing to watch in this season. What is Ricard now without the Shan part of the equation, where, you know, if Ricard has the great plan, and he did it this week without Shan, but now, okay, next at the next vote, you know, can he, you know, win over a Liana to get her going to his side, or, you know, can he keep his numbers? That's what's going to be really interesting to watch moving forward. Can he do it alone?
Yeah. I vote yes 1,000 times. Mm-hmm. And here's why. End of game strategy. I think Stephen Fishback noted this on Survivor Know-It-Alls this week, right? End of game strategy is, I want to go with the end with you, so please work with me now.
Yeah.
Or I think you can beat me at the end, right? To kind of play into someone's desire to keep you around. And I think Ricard is going to know how to pitch an end game with the right person in the right way. That's my prediction. I think he goes to certain people. I don't know which ones are the right ones yet, because Ricard has the lock on kind of the dynamics of the tribe right now. But I think in some cases, he's going to try to lock in final 2-3 with certain people and pitch to them, hey, this other person is more of a threat to you than me, right? And to other people, he's going to say, keep me, right? Don't target me because Xander is more of a threat, right? Or keep me around because I just heard that these people are plotting against you and I'm not as much of a threat to beat you at the end because of the jury, blah, 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 right? I think he's going to be able to craft the right story for each person to position himself in a way where he's not the vote next week. I hope that's the case. I think that's the case. I think that's the way it's going to play out.
Yeah. I really enjoy watching Ricard play. And so that it's going to be interesting no matter what he decides to do. But what about Xander, Jamal? Is anybody ever going to do anything about the Xander situation?
I know. Xander, my goodness, this kid. Ugh. I don't know, man. Like, he is doing something. There's some magic he's got.
Is it though? I wonder sometimes, like, he's been ballsy, that he has been, Stephen called him Diamond Hands the other night, but like, I almost feel like that is he doing so little that people aren't worried about him?
It's working, you mm-hmm. know, it's working. So it's kind of this thing where, like, yeah, certainly ballsy. And it's just kind of, I think you have this thing, right? Like, something about results. Don't you have a phrase that you say about this?
Being results oriented?
Like, results oriented mm-hmm. moves. And if it works, then it's a genius play. And if it doesn't work, then it was the dumbest thing ever. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think that's where we're at with him. Like, it's working. So everything he's doing is genius. Everything he's doing is mastermind, you know, crazy talented at Survivor. And eventually that's not going to be the case, I think, at some point. But I just think, like I noted earlier, I think he has just figured out that if he slow talks and is non-threatening and is just a go along with the crowd kind of vibe right now, then people will just kind of forget about how threatening he actually is to win the game, get to the end, and win the game. He has jury support, right? Like, I think Evie and Tiffany would be locks for him. And I think if he plays a strong move at the end of this game, I think he could win over. And, you know, depending on who he sits next to, but I think he has a path to win this game. That's why I think the target needs to be Xander next week. I think it just needs to be. Like, I don't think you can let him ride out another tribal without playing this idol. Mm-hmm. But I give him props. I give him props for figuring out the dynamic of this tribe and understanding, right? Because that's what it is, right? He's not playing it because he has a strong understanding that he is not the secret target. He just does, right? Because if he didn't, he would play it, right? And so you just have to kind of read into that and kind of deduce that he just has his finger on the pulse of where the venom is on the tribe, right? Like where the attack is. And then he just knows it's not him. So he's okay to let go of Evie. Mm-hmm. He's okay to kind of go along with the split votes and kind of be a pawn in this thing, knowing that it's not him yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've struggled with trying to just figure out where he is. Because, I mean, he kind of had like a purple edit in this episode this week. Like, he was not a part of any of this that was going on. The only time that he came up was like, oh, and Xander still didn't play his idol. So
the tribal, the first question that Jeff asked, he's like, Xander, so what, blah, blah, blah. And he was like, I think you're asking the wrong person, Jeff, because I don't know anything.
I was like, right. So he's just like totally on the outs, you know, that people are like, there's bigger fish to fry. He has his idol. He's never going to play it. And I just don't know, like, how much of it is, okay, is Xander like privately like, this is going amazing? Or is privately like, boy, I wish I had any idea what was going on.
Well, he's not completely out though, right? He got used this tribal, right? He knew who to vote for. He vote for the person that he was supposed to vote for, and it worked. He was one of the splits. I don't know if he was the Chan or the Liana vote, but he was in that calculation, you know? So he got pulled in. So he had a direction and he trusted it, and he knew that he could trust it, right? So for example, if you had to be Xander and you had this decision of like, okay, Ricard just came to me and he told me that we're going for Shan. Okay. Erica just came to me and told me to put 3 votes on Shan, 3 votes on Liana, and I got told to vote one way or the other. All right. If I don't believe that, then he has to think that that elaborate circumstance is just a smokescreen to target him.
Mm-hmm.
And that just seems so far-fetched, right? Like, do they really have to go through all this effort to, like, convince me that there's this split vote and then there's this tension and Ricard was going for Shan and then Shan is going for Erica? And like, is that going to be what the smokescreen against him is going to look like? And I think he just kind of decided no, right? He just kind of decided, I think I can trust this because this is too elaborate. It's
too much going on.
Too much going on, too much real tension between, you know, Lyanna and Deshaun and Shan and all that, that I think this is actually real. And I think I can actually trust that I'm not the person going home. I think if he doesn't get told who to vote for or gets told late or can kind of see through the body language at camp that people are trying to pull a fast one on him, then he'll know to play it. But that's what I think. That's why I think he didn't play it this time, because I think he just got a sense that the ongoings was just too much not going to be him, right? And that makes sense to me.
Jamal, the other big person this week was Erica, who has started to emerge a little bit here over the last couple episodes. It's really, you know, Erica, who is the one who forces the tie vote to get it to 3 votes on Shan and 3 votes on Lyanna. Do you have any thoughts about Erica?
Yeah, a lot of thoughts about Erica. Erica is a beast, yo. She's so great. I love Erica so much because she's so small and she's so cute and she's so soft-spoken, but like that takes away nothing from how killer her game is, right? You know what I mean? Like she is playing a cutthroat game.
Yeah.
So very impressed with her this week. Very impressed because a lot of times people will let themselves be the decoy vote, right? People will say, oh my gosh, like if that person plays the idol and then they vote for me, then I'm going home. And then the people that they're working with are like, relax, don't worry about it. Just, you know, don't make a big deal. Just kind of stay calm and whatever, right? Michaela got a lot of crap for being a little bit upset about the way that she was being used as the decoy vote. So this mm-hmm. is the thing, right? When you're the decoy vote, it doesn't feel good, but a lot of times you're just told to like be quiet and just let it happen and you're going to be fine and we'll take care of you. And what I love about what Erica did was that she did not do that, right? That she was like, nope, I'm not going to take any chances. This is my only time where I can get caught by a stray bullet from the baby or whatever the title of the episode was, machine gun baby, something, something.
Yeah. And she said, baby with a machine gun, which I thought was a weird analogy.
Weird little title, yeah. But it came from her. So that makes sense in her head at some point. Right. But she said, like, no, I will not do that. And I want it to be assured that I will not go home. And again, marketplace of ideas, where this was a little bit more risky, because what she then is asking Danny to do, and Danny tells us this whole thing, right? What she's asking Danny to do is to be okay with Lyanna going home instead of Shan going home if Shan plays the idol. That was her ask, right? Erica, not in so many words, but Erica said, Danny, please have it play out such that should Shan play the idol, Lyanna goes home and not me. And Danny said yes. And I think he could have said no. Mm-hmm. I think he could have said no. I think it was probably the right move for Danny to say no, if I'm being completely honest. But for some reason, Lyanna was expendable to that group, which further solidifies this idea that the alliance is done, and it's done in a way that each individual player is starting to make calculations for their own game. So for some reason, right, Deshaun and Danny believe that either Shan or Lyanna are expendable, and somehow Erica sleuthed that out.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it was like genius for her to do that or just kind of desperation for her to do that, but it worked. And I'm really impressed by that.
Jamal, on the Danny thing, that it was Danny's idea that he wanted to go after Ricard. He seemed like he got the ball rolling on that. But when we come back to the split vote plan for Danny, that it seemed like it was a loyalty thing for him. It was like, hey, you know, Shan, Lyanna, she broke the pact when she told Shan about, you know, this is what she deserved. He didn't say exactly that, but basically it's like, you know, that she crossed us. And so now this is what she gets.
Yep. And again, classic Survivor mechanics. That is 100% how you assess the veracity or the validity of your alliance, right? If your alliance is behaving in ways that is counter to what you've agreed on or what have you, then it's all bets off at that point. And that makes 100% of sense to me. It could be the wrong decision because, you know, you might be misinterpreting or somebody could be playing you, which I think is often what I get scared of sometimes. Like when someone comes to me on the island and is like, hey, they're coming for you. They're, you know, whatever. I'm like, I don't trust you. Like it's in your interest to have me think that my alliance is against me. So I'm not going to believe you. I'm going to believe my alliance. But other people would be like, she said what? Oh, that's it. I'm done. Right. Like, and so you just have to know who you're talking to. And so, yeah. So I think that Danny, that was a big deal for him. The loyalty, yeah. The honesty. And we've always known that about him.
Sure. Sure. Now, do you think that if this was normal Survivor and this is, you know, 3 days between tribal council and there was just more time that, yeah. Do you feel like that is that the kind of thing where that was heat of the moment? And if they have like maybe 24 hours to sit on it, that Danny ends up saying, and again, like things always happen right before tribal council. So it's not always like you have so much time, but it, like, you know, things are moving so fast because of just how quick the votes are coming.
Mm-hmm. I don't have a good assessment on this. I've heard you guys talk about this a couple of times, and I don't know that things are happening so differently than they would have otherwise with the timing. I just don't know that to be the case. And I say that because, you know, a lot of the tribals that I was a part of, the plan came together those 5 minutes before tribal happened. So like, you know, most of the time you're just kind of messing around, trying to survive, you know, you're out on the canoe, trying to fish and talking about silly stories about your families and things. And then all of a sudden it's like, all right, so anyways, what are we going to do? Okay. Right. So that, and that's just kind of how it goes. Yeah. That's why I actually think that Survivor, the organization, knew that they could still produce a great show with the shortened timeline. And I think this actually benefits us as an audience, because I think we're getting a more truer representation of what happens out there. You know, with so much more time, there's so much more time for other storylines that have to be ignored because they didn't actually influence the result.
Right.
Whereas now, maybe what's happening is everything that's being talked about is something that factors into how the game plays out. So we're actually getting more insight into what's true about what happened out there. We'll have to ask the players if that's the case. But that's kind of my instinct from watching from the sidelines here.
Jamal, I have some questions for you from the listeners of the podcast.
Ooh, and
okay, let me bring in a question from Bryce Henderson.
Bryce Henderson. Where's Bryce Henderson from?
I can get you that information, but I do not have it at the tip of my fingers.
Okay. All right, Bryce. What do you got?
Bryce Henderson, as the first ever castaway to get a beware advantage, an advantage with a tied in consequence, sure. How do you think the beware advantages were fine-tuned this season? And do you think they have a place moving forward in Survivor? Of course, that you did not even get the courtesy that right. Your beware advantage was a beware advantage. Yeah. But for these players, they've sort of like had a different spin on this idea of the beware advantage.
Yeah.
Again, hard to say. Also, again, that I think we take more issue with the word advantage for what happened to you.
Yeah, I definitely take issue with the word advantage for sure. It was the adjustment they had to make in terms of the game. It the backlash of my weird thing that happened to me was just so intense and just such a violation, right, of kind of the way that we just kind of understand the game to work. Similar, not exactly, but similar to the hourglass situation in this season.
Mm-hmm.
They're never doing that again. They're never doing that again.
Yeah.
They will not set it up where players win a challenge and they don't have safety, even though they were told they have safety. That was a big miss, a big blunder on Survivor's part. And similarly, I think my weird little note thing, they didn't anticipate how much of a weird thing it was going to be, but the Survivor fans really let them know that we don't like that. We don't like that. We want the players to have some sense of the stakes, right, of what's going on for them. Right. And to be honest, if I had saw a note hanging that didn't say, take me, I'm yours, but said, beware, this comes with risk. You know, do you want to leave it here or do you want to leave it for somebody else? I do think, given my position in the tribe at that moment, I would have left it. Or yeah. I would have said, Karishma, I think you should take it. You're in a better position than I am. You can right. take the blah, blah, blah. We'll work together. If it's something bad, I'll protect you. Don't worry about it. You know what I mean? I would have absolutely tried to be on the other side of taking the risk of that. That challenge. And so that's what I think is happening with this Beware advantage. I like it. I do like it because it gives the players enough information to make a decision. Again, back to what I said in the beginning, what would you do, right? What information are you using? What kind of person are you, right? That would you take the risk or not? Like, all of that is such fascinating human intrigue that tricking the players doesn't feel good. And I like more information than not in those kinds of circumstances.
So because of the Beware advantage, to get the idol, you had to say the secret phrase. We saw Nasir go 2 weeks ago, Shan go this week.
Yeah.
Do they finish the job and blindside Xander with his idol this week?
Well, Xander would be a fool, a straight up fool to not play his idol next week and get voted out. If he doesn't play his idol next week and doesn't get voted out, shame on everybody else. Right. Because it's real. We're at the end of the line here. Right. Like, you got to get this thing out of the game. It has become a disadvantage because it's so public. But Xander has been playing that so well up to this point because it's so public. People just kind of move off of him every once in a while. But this next time, he just better play it. He just plays it, like, regardless. You know, stop being afraid of wasting it or whatever. Mm-hmm. You got to play this thing next week. I can't yeah. imagine a circumstance where he doesn't.
But that hasn't been his MO this season.
It hasn't. But like I said, I think he was all set to play it this week, but just kind of felt like the plan that was materializing around him was too authentic to be a fake out. Mm-hmm. So he made that bet and he was correct. I think he needs to be super skeptical of anything anyone tells him from this point forward, because it's going to be a smokescreen. It will be a smokescreen. The target is Xander. Play your idol. If it's not, great, fine. You're safe again for another week. Same result, right? Play it or don't. I mean, sorry, play it. Either you get votes and you save yourself, or play it and you don't get any votes. You're still here next week. Right. So just do it. Right? It's the most guaranteed way to keep playing this game for a little bit longer. You got to play this thing.
It's such a tough spot because I think it's very difficult now to flush his idol because that you have sort of like divided sides potentially where or at least people vying for different people. I guess that everybody could like split the votes on. It's seven people left, so you put three, but Xander has an extra vote too, right? So this is tricky where I guess if you wanted to split the votes against Liana and Xander, I guess you could do it. The five people that voted against Shan could put three votes on Xander and two votes on Liana.
Who's doing that though? That's Heather, Erica, Ricard.
Sean? It would be five of the six people that voted against Shan and Liana. So, I mean, they have recently voted together, but are their interests mutually aligned enough that they would want to do that? Because it's sort of like, if one of them flips their vote, that they could go with Liana and Xander and do what they want to do, assuming that they vote together.
I'm even more resolved mm-hmm. after talking this through. I'm even more sure that he should play it, because what you just proposed, right, is that Xander should he's going to be told Liana and he's going to vote for Liana. Okay. Now they're going to split votes on Liana and Xander just in case Xander plays his idol. Okay. So now what you have done is you've let a person have the power who was supposed to vote for Liana now just switch it over to Xander to get him with the majority, and then Xander doesn't play his idol and goes home on a 3-2 vote. Like, no. There's no way that Xander should even risk allowing himself to be exposed to possibly being voted out by the majority of the votes next week. Because that scenario that we just talked through, shame on him if he thinks that.
He should have gone home on the vote where Tiffany went out. It doesn't make any sense that he doesn't play his idol, but it doesn't make any sense that they don't vote for him.
You're right. And I think we're in a situation where this is exponentially not making sense for him to not play it. You know what I mean? Like, it is the, it makes the most nonsense, if that's a phrase I can use.
Yeah.
For him to not play it next week, more so than any other tribal that has passed.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't make sense this week for him to not play it. It didn't make sense last week for him to not play it, but it makes even more not sense next week for him to not play it. Okay. So I'm hoping at some point the pressure is just overwhelming and he plays it and just calls it a day.
Okay. Let's see. How about a question from Gabe, who says, Shan had such a large edit for only making it to the final eight. Was her arc edited to make it feel like she was the main character who got killed off in an early season in a drama series, that there were red wedding vibes during the revote? Jamal, are you a big edit guy?
I've turned into one.
Yeah.
After playing the game and being like, huh, interesting that they decided to tell that story that way, or like, give that move to that player. And I wonder what the implications are. Right. So I've gotten more into it just from after being a player. Definitely not before that.
Yeah.
I think we're in a different era of the game, and edgic people are going to be pulling their hair out for the rest of this decade of Survivor, because I think we have shifted now from edit the story to like give someone a winner edit and to like dupe the audience to see what the vote is going to be, right? To who is playing an interesting game and who is compelling as a character. How do you have Shan on this cast and not give her as much time as she got?
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine what it would be like to have Shan out there and have her edited like Heather? That makes no sense. You have a gold mine in one-liners, in, you know, narration, in human experience, in brains, smarts, just like analyzing the situation. I almost feel like the producers didn't have a choice. I just feel like this was the game that was played out there. Here's the character that we had to tell us this story. We need the entire world to know what Shan's game was out here. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't think it had anything to do with the fact that she went out eighth or she had the chance to win. And we want to fool the Survivor fans into thinking that it's her and all this. I just think she just played a masterful game and they needed to figure out how to tell that story. And they had no other option but to give you everything about what Shan was doing and thinking and moving about and how it played out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's not like on Survivor, only the person that's a winner, you know, gets like all of the confessionals.
Yeah. Well, it's also true that like, the reason people get voted out 8th, 7th, 6th is because they were playing such a powerful game for the first 10 episodes, right? So how do you tell the story of the first 10 episodes without giving you the meat of what made that person such a threat and got them voted out in those spots, right?
Mm-hmm.
You kind of have to, right? Like, that's why you watch the game, right? Is to see how people overplay their hand to try to win.
Right. And I feel like that the show treated this vote out of Shan with a lot of like gravitas in terms of like just the score that they used for all of this to like really emphasize, you know, like just what a big play this was. You know, I think that it really came through that she was a big deal to the players. And, you know, if you were out there, you were, and you didn't see the edit, you realize like this, oh, wow. The number one contenders came off the board.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And that's very exciting. I'd be interested in the kind of Survivor fan who's like disappointed in the way that Shan was edited for that particular reason. Like, I just feel like that's exactly why you watch the show.
Well, I think if you're trying to read the edit, maybe people are trying to make it make sense. Jamal,
make it make sense.
She didn't win. Why was she on the screen so much?
If Heather wins this, we they really fooled us.
Okay. Let's see. How about Colby Pickett has a question for you. This season appears to have stopped adding idols and advantages into the game after the merge. I mean, that's what you don't jinx it. Okay. Are you okay with the game being the wild, wild west with these things pre-merge, as long as it stops once the tribes come together? Now, this is another week where we didn't see an advantage. I mean, we had the week where Xander could have found the advantage, didn't see it. We had Nasir play his idol, didn't get rehidden. We will see if Shan's idol gets rehidden this week, but there definitely have been, other than the hourglass twists, less advantages in the post-merge game. What do you think, Jamal? Is this by design?
No, definitely not by design. Right? Like you just said, Survivor thought there was going to be a whole episode around Xander finding the advantage at the sit-out bench, and they were going to do a whole segment on that. Right, to have him reading it, figuring it out, what he's going to do with it. Right, that's what they were prepared to do that episode. They didn't get to because he didn't find it. So that had nothing to do with Survivor. Mm-hmm. Right? We don't know that Nasir's or Brad's Nasir or Shan's idol is not rehidden. Maybe that, it just wasn't
fair. Yeah,
it doesn't play into the storyline because it didn't, you know, play out in any significant way. And there's a twist next week. So
right, we had the divide into two groups of five last week. So they weren't going to have like an advantage, and then also do the mechanic where they split into two groups of five.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, so I do not think we should be giving Survivor designers any kind of credit for giving us this pure, you know, Survivor that we've been yearning for without advantage. Things. I think it's just the way it played out this week, and they're right back to it next week. So don't get too excited. Yeah. Again, I don't begrudge advantages and idols. I just feel like don't flip a coin. You know, have it be something that gets earned or something that's hard to play. And I said that for years now, right? Give it, make it hard to get or hard to play. Don't just give someone a 50-50 coin and they can, you know, nullify someone's idol. You know what I mean? Like, we got to do something a little more interesting around these things than just that.
Jamal, correct me if I'm wrong, but the time when they went to the two groups of five in your season happened right after you went out, correct?
Sure did.
So when I spoke with Evie last week, they said that they were disappointed that they felt like that they could have got through the final 10 vote. And then this group of five ultimately was a bad draw for them. And Evie ended up getting voted out. Do you feel like that if you went into one of the groups of five, do you feel like that would have been a better spot for you than, you know, had you gone into the final 10 vote?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. 100%. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, my vote out, we merged at 13. And so then Kelly was the 13th and I was the 12th.
They did 6 and 6. Is that what they did?
No. So they did they did 6 and 5 because there were 11 left.
Okay.
Right. Because we merged at 13.
Got it.
Kelly went home. I went home. That gives us 11. And then it was a split vote where Aaron and Missy went home.
Got it.
Right. So it was more of a 6 and 5 situation. And I wish they did. Right. I wish they did a 6 and 6. Right. That would have been really amazing, actually. Mm-hmm. Now that I'm thinking, I've actually never thought about this. I wish they split after Kelly. Right. So that I could be in a situation where I have 6 people to play with instead of 11, because the like memory of the lines that were drawn at the Kelly vote carried over.
Yeah.
Right, to me. Right. Like, and so I think if they had mixed it up right then maybe I am working with 4 people who might feel a little more threatened by Aaron or more threatened by, you know, Nora or something.
Right.
And not been so clearly like, okay, well, we're just going to go ahead and knock off new Lyro. Right. And just kind of move forward that way, because that's what I was kind of fell victim to, besides all the other crazy that went on.
It's a small sample size that we've only seen it happen 3 times. And I've really been trying to sort of process like, well, who is this good for when they do this? Where that I felt like that Evie, who was at the bottom, I said that I think this is good for them because that they basically have to only figure out, how to get through. You know, you get 2 shots at winning immunity. You have a, you know, smaller group of people and potentially like somebody wants to, take a big shot. And that's ultimately like what what happened to Nasir. For Evie, it was just a bad draw where the person on the bottom at 10 also was on, ended up being on the bottom of a specific group of five.
Yeah, I think it's a beautiful experience for the people who are on the bottom. I also take issue with this bottom top construction, but I get it. It's a convenient way to kind of discuss the dynamics that are playing out. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think it flips.
Why? How would you say it?
Well, I don't know that I would say it anyway, to be honest. I just feel like top and bottom feels so simple, because if you have, you know, five and three, okay, right, you have five that are on the top and three on the bottom, but two people can just bail and now it's 5-3 the other way. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I don't get how you're supposed to incorporate being on the bottom or top. I think what happens is the construction is feeding itself, right? So if you're considered on the top, then you get lulled into this feeling of complacency. So then you can more easily and naively be flipped to the bottom because you're not trying to scramble and whatever. So I get that that's kind of how it plays. I feel like, what does it mean for me as a player if I'm considered, if I consider myself to be on the top or bottom? I think I would play the same way, right? I think I would play the same level of like,
sure,
paranoia.
Never stop working.
Yeah, you know, exactly. Never stop working. Don't be in first gear, Rob. Who would ever say that? That's mm-hmm. such a weird thing to say, to be in first gear. So I just kind of disagree with that. But anyways, I do think that to go completely against everything I just said, at the merge, after Kelly's vote, I was on the bottom, and then I was right. going to be taken out because I was on the bottom. And if I had swapped it up or mixed it up a little bit, I might have had the chance to be on the right side of a vote at that time.
So Matt Gillum has a question, and this is, I've seen people talking about this one on Twitter, and I think it's an interesting question. When Shan left, Shan publicly stated that Ricard had her vote for $1 million.
Do you think
that this will have any impact on the rest of the game? So Matt didn't ask this specifically, but I want to know from you, Jamal, was this a dig? Did she sort of like set a trap for Ricard here?
I don't think so. And it is baffling to me that she did that, because she's so smart and she's so astute that she has to know that it would have put a target on his back. But from everything that happened during her voting out, I feel like she just had a moment of not really understanding that. Like, I do think that she was being genuine. I think she was like, I love you so much, Ricard. You're it. Mm-hmm. You earned my vote. Like, I think she just meant that, not really analyzing it as a shot across the bow kind of thing, you know, because then she goes on to say that Deshaun is a snake and all of that, which at this point in the game, and this is what I keep trying to explain to my family, right? Because they're like, oh, why don't you just take him out? Like, oh, I don't like that person. That person should go home. It's like, at this point in the game, people that you don't like become the most valuable, mm-hmm. right? Anyone who heard Shan say that should be like, Deshaun, sit right next to me, please. You are a snake. I need you next to me so that I can get Shan's vote, because clearly Shan is not voting for you, right? Like, that's how that works at this part of the game. And so I don't think it was intentional, just from trying to read her and trying to understand her motivations. But I think inadvertently, that's exactly what she did. Yeah. I don't think anybody at that moment is now like, has some epiphany about that. Like, I think everyone understands this, that Ricard is a jury threat and all of that. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't think it really hurt in terms of making people like all of a sudden aware that Ricard is a jury threat, but it does feel like she shouldn't have done that. Right.
This is probably not ideal for Ricard. I'm sure Ricard is like, well, I wish you didn't say that just now. But I have not yet gotten the chance to interview Shan. That we have the Thanksgiving holiday, so that the CBS offices were closed on Thursday when we normally do the exit press. And so we're going to have the Shan exit interview coming up on Monday. And so that is definitely on my list of questions to ask Shan.
It's
curious. A long list.
Yeah. Talk to her for a little longer, Rob. You know that the players have a little more time to talk to you than you give them. Do you know that? Or are you like contractually obligated to?
So kind
15 minutes.
So that, I mean, they tell me that I have 15 minutes. There have been a short, like a list of players that have sort of like pushed back on the publicist and, you know, let us go to overtime. But, you know, you feel like that if I was going to like throw my weight around and say like, hey, like, look, this is Rob as a podcast. Give us 20 minutes. I don't know. I kind of feel like that it would be a short lived experiment.
That's fair. I get it.
I try to be professional. They tell us we have 15 minutes. Yeah. I try to keep it to 15 minutes.
All right. It's just funny because you did that to me, too. You were like, oh, I'm sure you have so many more people to talk to and you got to get going. And I was like, no, I actually don't. But all right, if you're going.
Yeah. So look, I kind of feel like that if the player sort of pushes back, it's like, come on, mom, come on, we're 5 minutes. A couple of different players have done that over the years, and usually they give them the time.
Okay. Well, I'm going to DM Shan right now and be like, go ahead and take a little extra 5 minutes. Cause I think, I think we want to hear from you.
Well, I also I don't know their schedule. Like, so I don't know if they have like another interview. Like I'm trying to be professional to the other people that are doing the exit press also. So I don't want to like, eat into somebody else's time.
Yeah, that's fair.
Fair. And so it's, it's a whole operation, all of the exit press. It'll be interesting to see what she says about that. How about Grace is asking Rob and Jamal, it seems like Ricard's decision to turn on Shan established him as the player to beat. Who can Ricard work with to get to the end, considering that he was the target before his immunity win? So it's interesting, Jamal, where you could say that get out Ricard, in the economy of ideas, I guess he was at the bottom. Now he's gone from the bottom to the top.
Mm-hmm. And become the player to beat. Yeah. I mean, I spoke about this a little bit earlier, right? Like, I think Ricard has a path here. I think he does have a path to get further.
What does it look like?
I think Xander can be scapegoated, or if that's the right term. He can be his target, right? I think Xander is the best story for the most people right now. Look, this guy, to use Steven's phrase, this guy pisses ice water. So funny that you said that.
Who is Steven? What is he?
I giggled just like this when he said it too. Mm-hmm. In the car, I was like, "Who, Steven? What? Who says that?" Mm-hmm. But yes, he does. He does indeed do that, and it's a threat to all of you that Xander, with his idol, especially as the numbers go down, he can just use it and be the one to pick who goes home, and it can fall on any of you. I feel like Erica is very receptive to that story because she's already shown us that she likes to strategize against the use of an idol play. I think Heather will do whatever Erica wants, right? And so I think Ricard has a way forward here to then, play on Deshaun a little bit to say like, hey, we work together against Shan. Let's continue to work together. Like, I want to do what you want to do. I do think there's a path forward here for Ricard to not be the one to beat next week. And I think he just needs to keep recreating that for himself week after week as the numbers dwindle. It's going to get harder and harder. So I think he does need to go on a little bit of a challenge run so that at least one of these next weeks, he's not up for debate, right? He's not up on the block, so to speak. But I think he does have some stories to tell to keep himself in the game.
With Xander, do you think it's better to get the votes on him or Xander is his shield?
No. The shield play is done. Like, no,
it's
no,
done?
No. Yeah. No, there's no shield now. What is it? Final seven right now?
Final seven.
There's no shield. This keep Xander at 13 because he's a shield. Keep Danny at 13 because he's a shield in the stereotypical survivor way. But at seven, use the shield, right? Like, that's the time to actually deploy it and say like, here, vote him. Don't say keep him because he's a shield for me at four. Like, no, use it now because he's the one that needs to be, rallied against in order for you to stay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no. There's no meat shield.
No meat shield
strategy should be happening right now.
Yeah. Well, and Xander, he likes stew.
He does like loves him some stew.
Joel, I got so much people pushing back when I said that stew is not great. Are you a stew guy?
Neutral on stew.
The last time you were on the podcast, we talked about how, or and it wasn't the last time. The last time we did the Survivor recap, you talked about how you had gone to some sort of a work thing, and they had a cold tortellini out, and you didn't want to yuck anybody's yum, and I think I must have done that this week. I must have yucked people's yums
because I talked. Gotta be careful, Rob.
Yeah, I should never. I shouldn't do that. But
there's a lot of yums out there to yuck, and you know, don't. I'll give my advice. The advice you gave me, I'll give the advice to you. Don't get hung up on people's negative comments, Rob. Mm-hmm. If you hate stew, okay?
Yeah,
I need you to be steadfast and assured of your own evaluation of the stew's deliciousness. Okay,
yeah.
Be you.
Well, but then I started thinking about I don't know if my mom listens to these recaps, but I'm like, well, maybe my mom made it bad. Maybe it was like, because at our house, it was like, we were like, me and my sister were like, oh, no, stew. Oh, gross. Maybe there's some good, like I'm not going to anybody's house. Like, please, Jamal, like, when am I eating dinner at somebody's house? But when am I having stew?
Well, this is the thing. You are never going to have stew because everyone will always know that Rob Cicinino hates stew, right? So you put it out there in the universe, and now that's going to benefit your life. I think you're good.
Maybe if I go to like some sort of like a hot soup bar, sort of like buffet, and they have stew on it, I'll try it somewhere else. I'm not going to order it.
That's true. I do think you have to get some more samplings of stew and stews from different cultures too, because it's all about the spices.
Okay.
So I think you just got to get a good sampling size.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I know what was going on at my house, and it was not great. Dana wants to know, in past interviews, Jamal talked about how Tribal Council is all theatrics, and we've seen that turned up a notch with the added fear of the shot in the dark this season. Do you think that there were any hints in this tribal that should have prompted Shan to play her idol?
It's
a good question.
That's a great question. Good job, Dana.
Well, let's just take it in two parts to go back to the Tribal Council is all theatrics. You know, I don't remember exactly how I felt at the time. I think you were talking about it, you know, with the Danny Boatwright vote and everybody dumping out their bags in Winners at War. And I think that's how we were talking about Tribal Council is all theatrics. But I do feel like that Tribal Council, in a lot of ways, I feel like is a total waste of time up until we get to like the live tribal, which I guess that is also can be just theatrics.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so think about it this way, right? Six people who had to coordinate in order to get Shan out the way they just did. Six people, right? So think about that plan was hatched back on the island. Now, to get behind the camera a little bit, they shut things down. They lock everybody down. You can't talk. First of all, you like traverse the beach 1,000 times with your torches to get all the shots and all that. And you get on a boat, you get to the tent, you know, get your makeup and not makeup, but you know, they fix up your clothes and everything to go out. And now you sit down and now Jeff is in front of you. That takes at least an hour or more. So those players, by the time they sit down in those seats, are operating on the plan that they hatched almost 2 hours ago. And you're telling me that someone stands up, they do this theatrics, they accuse someone of betraying them and lying to them and all this stuff. And you voted me and this happened at Tribal and you suck at the challenges and Jeff is asking questions. And then those six people still go to the booth and have that same plan through all of that. And so you're absolutely right, Rob. What was all that for? It didn't change the vote, right?
Yeah.
It just was a theater performance. It just was something to either keep Shan off the scent, right? Or to try to like assure the people who are in the plan that they need to stick to the plan, right? And if that happens, then Tribal Council was pretty inconsequential, you know?
Yeah. Or, you know, part of the plan is like, hey, let's just see if we can get somebody with like an itchy trigger finger to play their idol.
Right, right.
You know, it was
right.
almost like that this was like a sort of like a calm vote of like it wasn't a live tribal. I wonder if you have an idol, if you should be thinking like, boy, why are people trying to like nobody's trying to act like crazy to get somebody to play an idol?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's the kind of thing where you read it one way or you read it the other way and you just have to make a decision. Right. So maybe Xander should have felt some kind of way and got a little nervous when what's his face? Ricard pointed to him and said, well, he has an idol and it's so public and blah, blah, blah. Like, mm-hmm. like maybe Xander should have gotten a little bit shifty, yeah. but he didn't. And that is because I think they all kind of have this sense that all of that is just to get Shan off the scent. You see what
right,
I'm saying?
Right.
And that's my like call about tribal, which is like a majority of people go in with the plan to vote that person out. If that's what happens, then everything that happens.
Right. That's really interesting. So going back to like last week, we got some voicemails that were about like, shouldn't Nasir have known that something was up when Heather didn't play her shot in the dark, when she's asking like, oh, if there's a miracle, I hope an idol falls from the sky. And then doesn't play her shot in the dark. Like that doesn't really make sense. And if you're Shan, that it's like, okay, this whole plan is that we think we're going to blindside Erica, but we're trying to get Xander to flush his idol, and Xander isn't playing his idol. Should she stand up and say, I know it's a hell of a call, but you know, is there anything there that she should say? Yeah. Why didn't he play his idol? That is weird. I got to play my idol.
That is four-dimensional survivor mm-hmm. right there. If she did that, she would be a Einstein level genius.
Yeah.
Because the more convenient thought, or the more the thought that she had, I think, is they did such a good job of convincing Xander that he was safe, that he didn't feel like he needed to play his idol, and he was making the risky call to not do it. That mm-hmm. would be a very reasonable conclusion to draw. Not to then say, oh, not playing it means that Xander thinks that it's me, so yeah. I need to play my, right, like that.
Well, I'm not even saying like so from hard. For Shan specifically, but I'm just wondering, just sort of like big picture, like if the person that you are expecting to have like something like bad happen to them, and then yeah. it's like they are not acting necessarily yeah. like that bad thing is happening, like is that a warning sign, especially if I have an yeah. idol in my pocket of... Mm-hmm. Wait, if this doesn't happen the way I expect it to, like yeah. Sophie, when I talked to her last week, she said survivors need like a checklist of like, and the checklist is basically like, if this particular event happens, I do this thing and I don't have to think about that. That's just on my list of like, you know, if I go to a tribal council and I'm expecting somebody to get their idol flushed and they're not, they don't play it, like, okay, something's up.
Yeah, that is so... I love this because I did not consider the shot in the dark being anything more than just a last gasp mm-hmm. of trying to stay alive like Sydney did, but more as like a indicator of someone's confidence in the way the vote is going to go. That is that's high level stuff. Mm-hmm. And so you're absolutely right. Not so much this time around, but Nasir, if he was a better strategist than he was, which I've had some thoughts about, he should have absolutely sniffed out that Heather did not feel like she was going home. Mm-hmm. And he should have been like, well, if she doesn't feel scared, then it might be me because my idol.
And Erica was immune also.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So it had to be him. That is really good. I hadn't considered that. I think the shot in the dark has really introduced that element to tribal that I think feels a little unintentional now that yeah. we're talking. I don't know that Survivor intended for that to be used as like whether or not to play my idol or advantage, but mm-hmm. it very well could be. For yeah. Sure.
It's been interesting, the shot in the dark. I can't believe it's only happened once the whole season.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. For sure. I think that's how valuable people's votes feel like they are to them, because it's hard. It's a hard call to make, you know, like you hatch a plan that only would work to save you if you could cast the vote for the other person.
Imagine if you had a shot in the dark. I mean, that you certainly would have been reaching for it the night that you went home, right?
Yeah,
and then what would the other players would have had to adjust to try, and maybe that opens the door for you to be able to like, okay, well, maybe we gotta, okay, now we gotta do this, we gotta do this, and then, you know, somebody else gets scared.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. If I had the shot in the dark that night, I would have absolutely used it. Every before every tribal, you know, the producers, they ask you, you know, how do you feel? Do you feel safe? And the whole time I had been saying, I feel pretty good. I feel like it's not me. I don't know if I know what's exactly going to go down, but I feel like it's not me. The time that they asked me before the tribal, I went home, was the first time I answered, I think it's me. Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. So I was pretty sure that it was going to be me. And not every Survivor player, I would say most Survivor players, don't have that kind of confidence about when they're going to go home, because obviously, you know, Survivor does such a good job of kind of dupe them and steer them away from knowing that it could be them, especially now that there's this shot in the dark. But yeah, if it was around during my time, I wonder if the tribe experience would have been different, right? So that I wasn't so sure that it was me, you know, because mm-hmm. that would be part of the tribe strategy, right? Because now every single time you go to tribal, you have to make sure the person who's going home doesn't think they're going home.
Okay. Jamal, I have a question for you from PJ. PJ says, so excited for Jamal. Robin Steven touched on this on the Know-It-Alls, but I'd like to hear Jamal's perspective on Shan's assertion that if she went to the end with Ricard as a pair, she'd lose because men generally get the credit, etc. I think her fear was completely justified based on the show's history, but could there have been a different outcome with this cast on the jury? I'm still not sure. Now, yeah, Ricard... Yeah. said in the moment, like, and I think this season would be different.
Yeah, he's right. Ricard is absolutely right. Like I said, I said this when we were talking about Shan in the beginning of our time together. No way anyone wins next to Shan.
Right.
Zero people next to Shan win this game. Shan wins this game if she gets to the end. And fair or unfair, I think there's this growing pressure in our society to have a female winner. Mm-hmm. And a viable woman that gets to the end is going to have that wind at their back because we want it. We want it so bad, you know? Not to say that it would have been undeserved, because I think Shan on her own, regardless of her gender, would have absolutely gotten it. But I think in this instance, being a woman would not have counted against her, especially with who the jury would be if mm-hmm. Shan were to make it to the end, right? She would have her entire Black Alliance on the jury probably, right? She would have all of these, you know, powerful people like Evie and, you know, I don't know who's at the end with her, but, you know, Erica or Heather or whoever, right, would absolutely be all for voting for Shan. Yeah, 100%. Shan would win this game if she got to the end.
I agree. I think she definitely would. I don't know how Ricard could like convince her or if it would be in his best interest to convince her.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, unfortunately, because Shan believed that, it didn't give Ricard an avenue to try to get to the end with her. Mm-hmm. Right. Although, you know, now that I say that out loud, maybe Ricard also knew what I'm saying. And so Ricard knew that he could.
Yeah, I think he knew, like, one of the things I wanted to ask you about that I just remembered was that, do you feel like, when do you feel like that Ricard made the decision that he had to get, vote out Shan? Because did he already know he was going to vote out Shan when she told him that the guys were trying to get him out?
So the show would have us believe that he made the decision while they were strategizing to get out Erica after the immunity challenge, because that was the very next clip is his confessional where he tells us that he has decided to vote out Shan. I'm going to read into Ricard's strategy a little bit and kind of presume that he had been thinking about his vote for Shan for a very long time and always knew that he needed to strike first. And so this whole like, wait, it's not time was just a long game to push Shan off of him for as long as possible so that he could work out the circumstances where it would make sense mm-hmm. for him to take the shot. And the situation fell right there. Right. The situation fell into his lap. So you see him saying, like, I don't think he decided that I'm going to take out Shan at number whatever. But I think given the way that the vote was moving, given that he had won immunity, right, given the pieces that he knew he could put into place, given the energy against Shan that he was observant of, right, because he observed that Deshaun was the one to bring in against Shan because of all the tension that was going on, right? He knew that that was the vibe and knew that that was the right time to strike. So I think it's a little more nuanced than like he knew he was going to do it right then, or he didn't know at all when he would. I think it's a combination of all that together.
Jamal, who will be the winner of Survivor 41?
Gosh, I knew you were going to ask this question, and I'm never prepared for this question. I'm never prepared for this question just because there's so much Survivor left. You know, there's
not
so
really
Survivor left. There is seven people left.
Seven people left. There's three nights of Survivor left.
We have this big twist next time. Well, it depends on who goes home, right? Okay, I'll say it this way. If Ricard gets to the end, I think he wins.
Sure. Right?
So he's the one to get out. But do I think Ricard wins? No, I don't think. Because I think that Deshaun knows that. Danny and Deshaun are one, right? They're going to work together. I think they're going to easily be able to flip on Ricard if something weird doesn't happen, right? I think Erica is going to know that Ricard is the one to get out, right? And I think they can maybe take out Xander with the I just feel like I know who would win if they get to the end. I just am thinking that everyone else knows that too, and will strategize against that person to not let them get there. You know what I mean? Like Janet wins my season if they let her get to the end, but everyone else knew that too. So they were like, all right, we got to take out Janet. You know what I mean? So it's hard to say like now, cause that's about not right. Well, seven was Elaine. Or Karishma, one of the two. I think Karishma, right? So it's Karishma, Elaine, Janet, right? Like that string of people who went out at the point in the season, they all had the chance to win. You know, Elaine wins if she gets to the end. Janet wins if she gets to the end. But Tommy and Dean and Dan and, you know, Nora figured that out too. So I think that's what's going to happen here, right? That like these smaller players are just going to know that they have no shot against a Xander or a Ricard and they're going to go out, right? I think that's as far as I can go. I don't think I can make a winner prediction. I'm sorry. Sorry to disappoint.
You never disappoint me, Jamal. Anything else that you had on your list that you wanted to talk about from the season?
No, I think we did an amazing, exhaustive job of just kind of talking through the game and the strategy and all of that. I've just, you know, I feel a little bit, I don't know. Like, I think the way that this game is consumed and the way that I see people talking about it is a little bit disheartening to me at times, especially when you start to, you know, dive deep into these really frustrating conversations about the Black Alliance and women and the hate that people get. And, you know, and then there's arguments about, you know, people are hating on Shan because of her religious background and being the kind of player she is, but nobody gave any of that kind of hard time with other kinds of players. And so now like race and gender are like kind of inserted into how people are perceived and treated differently and accepted differently by the majority. You know, there's so much there. And I, again, just want to like underscore or like reiterate that if your experience with watching the game is a negative one, right? If you are struggling to enjoy the show or you're really seriously worked up about some of the ways in which, you know, Jeff isn't saying come in guys again, and that has like ruined my experience of watching the show. Like if you're in this space where you're just like hate watching this show and it's really affecting you, There's some reevaluation necessary to just kind of learn to love the show again for the right reasons, right?
Well, look, if you're posting on social media about that, come on in, guys, and that happened 10 weeks ago, and you're still like, I kind of feel like that's a lost cause, Jamal, and you know, like that. I don't want to give these people too much attention, but I guess I would want to know, like, what could we be doing better in the podcast to help there be less tolerance for these types of things?
That's a good question. I think, like you said, you just got to kind of not give them that kind of airtime or that kind of serious consideration for any kind of any, like, not put any weight on their analysis, right, of the show in this particular way. And, you know, the more that we all can just really, like, value the story of the person, right? Like, but value the character and, like, try to understand why they're making the decisions they're making. I think I'll say it this way. That's where I enjoy the show the most. Like, I love all of these characters because it makes so much sense to me why they're doing what they're doing. And the only reason I have any kind of inkling about that is because it's the story's being told to me in a responsible, full, complex way. You know what I mean? Like Sydney, for example. Love to hate Sydney, right? She definitely
had to hate her.
Different style about her than I do, for yeah. sure, or most people. But even with her, I think they gave her a fair shot to, like, explain her perspective, right? And so you get to just see, like, okay, you think very highly of yourself. And I might feel some kind of way about that. You're arrogant, or, well, you know, you have a silver spoon in your mouth, blah, blah, blah. I don't think those things. I'm just kind of quoting what I've seen said about her. But you still feel like you have this full, like, you get it. Like, you get why she got paranoid, because she thinks that everyone's against her because she's who she is, or she, you know, whatever. And over and over again, as soon as you, like, kind of remember that these people are just people, right? And they're very much human beings who have gone back into their own lives for months now. So you sliding into their DMs and saying weird things now is really strange on top of the weird things that you're saying. But just learn to love the characters and to just, you know, really appreciate the complexity of the game and have fun with the, you know, I would do this, or what would you do? Or, you know, that ended up being a silly move because it ended up being this way, but she couldn't have known that. And, like, that's the fun of this game. And I just want to just say, without any hesitance or even caveats, like, I love Survivor, and I love what Survivor has done in response to all that we did as Black Survivor alums, to adjust to the ways in which we want to consume these people's stories. Like, I really, really am a big fan of season 41 in particular. And I think going forward, I think they got it right, you know, and I make no apologies for that. I think we really are doing a good job.
And look, we have been critical at times of Survivor 41 for, you know, just it's been, you know, 15 pounds of whatever in a 5-pound bag at times, of just, like, so many different things that they're trying to fit into one season of the show, let alone a 26-day season of the show. But I think this is a great week to, you know, give Survivor 41 its flowers, because that this was just a, you know, an incredible hour that was just very earned from the previous 9 weeks of the show to get to this point that we had, like, an epic all time episode of Survivor this week.
Yeah. And that is such a good point, right? Because even, like, here's the smallest of examples, right? Is the Shantham, right?
Yeah.
A little humming thing that would have not have meant anything to us if we hadn't built up that moment very early on, and her having it explained to us and what she does, and overlaying it on her strategy, such that all they had to do was give us that one moment at the reward challenge and we got it. And it landed, and we felt this continuity, right, of the story of all these people's time out there on that island.
Yes, yeah.
Absolutely.
All right, Jamal, what's next for you?
Oh, man. Besides trying to finish this crazy season of Survivor, I don't know. My future is open. You know, I'm still trying to.
What are you doing for fun these days, Jamal? You told us about work.
Yeah. Well,
are you doing anything fun?
I'm doing a lot of fun things. Yep, doing a lot of fun things. I'm a suffering fantasy football player at the moment.
So
my second obsession.
Yes.
Is the fantasy football thing, which I've tweeted about a little bit and had some fun conversations.
Who do you play with? Just friends?
Yeah. So I have a group of friends that I used to play with back in one of my old jobs in New Jersey that just kind of stayed. I've since left, you know, that job, but we all kind of stay in touch and still play this silly game. Mm-hmm. And then I have one for my job.
I'm a big fantasy football guy. So, you know, it's been a frustrating year for most of it. Although I can't believe have you not gotten an invite to the Survivor fantasy football league, Jamal?
I haven't.
Okay. Well, I'll put in a good word for you.
Whose head's got a roll that kept me out of Survivor fantasy football?
I don't know if anybody kept you out of it, but I think there's a few people that could be replaced. You didn't hear it from me.
It's cutthroat.
Are you a Patriots fan, Jamal?
Oh my gosh, I am what you might call an anti-Patriots fan.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah. No, I'm from New Jersey originally. I'm a Giants fan through and through.
Okay.
And so, yeah, I'm actually more so than just an anti-Patriots fan. I'm an anti-Boston fan. So I know I'm gonna make a lot of people upset with that, but it's just my experience. Okay. I was in New England, the, series that the Red Sox won for the first time, way back in the day.
Yep. 2004. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And they broke the curse in 100 years, whatever. And
hey, Jamal, smarten up.
Boston Rob, please.
That's why I took away your vote. I heard what you were saying.
That might be true. That might be true. He might have been like, I got the perfect.
Here's a pencil, right? Go Pats, Jamal.
Yeah, I think that might have been the case. I just was all done with Boston after that night specifically. tough, bro.
All right. Well, Jamal, I love getting to talk Survivor with you because you always bring a ton of points to the table and push back about things that I'm saying. It's always super fun.
Yeah, I have a great time. I've been looking forward to this for all season long.
Good. And then please come back every season, Jamal.
I want that. You know what was fun? Did you see Davey's tweet?
What did he say?
Davey tweeted after the episode. He was like, "Whew, I'm glad Jamal is talking to Rob after that episode and not me."
Oh, okay. Nice.
Which is so funny because I think he would have a lot of insightful things to say. But that just goes to show that this episode just was so, so impactful for everybody. And so I was so happy to be able to talk it through with you.
Yeah, this was great. Yeah, it's been a very busy 48 hours. I did the know-it-alls and then I unplugged my computer and then have been like packing and moving stuff ever since. So this is the first time I have re-engaged with Survivor since Wednesday night.
That's great. Well, congrats on the move. I know you probably have a lot more work to do in there, but it's got to feel good to finally be in.
This was a nice break.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
for sure. Glad to give that to you.
All right, Jamal, where could the nice people keep up with you?
I want it all. I'm fine with engaging.
No, don't. But you know, then you open the door for then these people like say, like, "Well, you said you wanted to see it."
You're right. I like honest, open dialogue. Not the really extreme stuff. But you know, if you disagree with me, I'm all about it. So, anyways, Twitter, JamManK9. Instagram, JamManK91, Jamal Shipman on Facebook. I think those are the main ones. And then I kind of lurk. I lurk in the Reddits and the Discords. So don't at me there.
Go looking under all these rocks also, Jamal.
Yeah, that's true. I think after this conversation, I'm going to go back to.
Well, it's just that there's that. There's like a lot of privilege coming from me to like be saying this, but I just like there's so many like wonderful people who would love to talk about Survivor with you. Like, why are you looking for these dark corners of the internet where people are saying horrible things?
That's fair. That's very fair, and it is going to be healthy.
Talk to the people that love you, Jamal.
I will do exactly that. Exactly that.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Rob, for having me on. This was such a dream come true.
I hope you were reading the chat. There's so many people that they loved getting to hear you today.
Oh, good. Yeah, I have not been reading the chat. I've purposefully been not doing that. I'm not good at it. I'm not good at the double tasking there. So I'm probably going to rewatch this and read the chat along with as it goes. So that's be fun.
Yes. Okay. All right. Well, get your comments in for Jamal in the chat now before we wrap this up. But Jamal, again, thank you so much. I really mean it. I love getting to talk about the game with you. It's super fun, and hopefully we'll do it again soon.
Absolutely. All right. Take care, Rob. Thanks a lot.
All right, everybody, there you have it. Jamal Shipman back here on the podcast. Jamal, as advertised, great job. Once again, so much fun getting to talk Survivor with Jamal. But you just listen to the podcast. Of course, you know that. Of course, this episode of Rob's Podcast, this interview was sponsored by our friends over at Geico. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. And I bet it could be hard work, but you know it's easy bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. And it's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Visit geico.com, get a quote, see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com. I am going to get back to unpacking after my big move this week, but we will get back together to talk to Shannon Gus this weekend on the Survivor Feedback Show. Get your feedback questions in if you have not done so. We're going to record on Saturday night. robiswebsite.com/voicemail for that. And then, of course, so we'll also be back on Monday night for the patron Q&A, plus a wand off this weekend, too, on a jam-packed week of Survivors. We're heading into the home stretch of Survivor 41. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast. robiswebsite.com/subscribe so you don't miss anything. We'll be back again soon. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye. Support for this podcast comes from our friends over at Geico. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. And I bet it can be hard work, but you know it's easy bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too. You're busy enough. Go to geico.com and get a quote and see what you can save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today.